Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It's Memorial Day, so a big thank you to everybody who gave their lives.
I mean, well, yes, we're thankful for those who gave their lives, but they did give their lives, so they wouldn't be listening to us, but we're thankful for them.
Thank you to all the families who gave up their people.
Yes, very, I think that for non-liturgical traditions, there's Memorial Day is a big thing. They tend to honor people, but we had Trinity Sunday last Sunday, so we didn't mention it. We probably should have said something more, but we didn't.
Apparently, somebody managed to squeeze the two things into a church service.
Oh, really?
Somebody on Twitter was I can't remember who and how they accomplished it. And we had the bishop, so we were distracted by the Trinity and the confirmations.
Yeah. But really, seriously, since I'm very, very, very thankful for the hundreds of thousands of people who've died for us. Hopefully that we don't squander what they died for, which we seem to be in the process of doing.
Yeah. this might be one of those times when you go out with a sense of civic duty rather than just staying home and eating bonbons and celebration.
Yeah.
Well, so we, I'm not really taking the day off because not all of our children are finished with their finals. Which are due, a lot of stuff was due last night, but then stuff was due on Wednesday, I think, is the final moment for the last remaining child.
It does drag on, doesn't it?
So I have to go and scream at this child or another way. I don't know how else to motivate somebody to learn an entire year's worth of... No, I'm just kidding. Hopefully this person's not learning everything from scratch right now, but somehow we ended up with one real procrastinator. More than one, but...
Which one are you talking about? Are you talking about one of the boy children or
the girl children?
Because we have a procrastinator on both sides of that divide.
Yeah.
One who, like, since he was a child, when he would say, I need you to clean your room, we'd go in and he'd be like asleep on the floor. Like, he'd just lie his big head down on the floor.
But that's not procrastination. That's just, like...
laziness.
Whereas this other one has premeditated that she thinks there's a certain amount of time that she has.
I have 2 hours to finish this 6-page paper, so it's okay.
Yeah. So first
I'll start in 15 minutes.
Yeah. I had to do all this other stuff first. Like, I have to take a shower and clean my room and make myself a big fancy meal and
you're
find
kind of
my
like
books.
That, though, actually. You do that. Unless your house is perfectly clean, you can't write an article. You can't sit down at your desk and do anything.
I mean, it's been
maybe she got that from you.
Beaten out of me a little bit. I'm not exactly that way. I've learned to go places where I can't see all of the stuff. The problem most for me right now is that there's nowhere where I can't see the horror of an unclean house. Which is why I wanted you to build me a shed in the back garden. So this has to be short. And I'm reading Digital Minimalism, as I keep saying. And I think it's really interesting because I think he makes a great case for why we should all stop using social media at all. But then if you do feel like you have to use it, you should confine it to certain spheres or make sure that you use it and it doesn't use you, which is how most social media works. But the book was written before COVID. And so as the pages have gone by, I'm sorry, the screen, because I'm reading it on my Kindle. I feel a deep sense of ambiguity. What's the word? Ambivalence. Because I know that it's very likely that COVID was invented in a Chinese laboratory.
And now you can say that without being a conspiracy theorist.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Now you can say that, like, with the Washington Post and the New York Times on your side.
It's possible that it was invented in a lab, and that's why it works so well to kill human people. But I'm just wondering if some of the people who gave money to the invention of this pandemic, here's the conspiracy part that I've really just made up just now, and there's no evidence for this anywhere, was like the social media conglomerates like Facebook, Twitter, and Zoom. Like, did Zoom give money to the NIH to give to Wuhan? Because one of the, you know, in the book, which is written before COVID, there's a question in the air, like, well, you could probably exist without engaging on, you don't need a digital life to the degree that you think you do. You should have in real life relationships. But all of that definitely went away with COVID. And the even more stressful part, which he's not a Christian, so he doesn't bring it up at all, but any person of faith should be asking this question, especially when health departments explain of various states explain to you that you can worship God on Zoom. You don't need to go to church.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, I'm pretty sure this guy would say if you were of faith, well, obviously your faith needs to be an embodied, lived, or as some people say, an analog experience. Like, faith is analog.
But is analog just, oh, not computerized?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, as opposed to digital. And I mean, maybe I should go and wonder if he's written about this. But sure, you can be on Zoom for a certain amount of time. I know we've talked about this before. But I'm just curious because COVID did make these platforms even more necessary. In fact, we are streaming our service on Facebook, which he particularly excoriates over and over again through the book. It's basically like one long, you should never use Facebook screed. And yet we live stream our service on Facebook every Sunday, and we live stream our Bible studies. And there has become a sense in which those things are evangelistic and necessary for many members of our congregation, both. Like, one hand, people watch and hear about Jesus who never had before.
Some decision, because, well, some people, like, you know, if you're, I totally understand if you're on vacation or you're sick, and it's really nice to be able to watch, to be virtually with your congregation when you're out. My concern isn't that. I mean, that's one of the reasons I love the, I think I disagree with you a little bit about this book. I really do like
a little bit. Every time I try to read you anything from it, you get mad at me. I'm wicked for not wanting to be on Facebook at all anymore.
Because if the pandemic had taken place, and setting aside questions about whether it was legitimate or not, I don't want to get into that, but if the pandemic had been, you know, 50 years earlier, we wouldn't have had much contact with our congregation. We would have people out of worship for a year. Not hearing a sermon for a year. People being just completely isolated in a way that they were not totally isolated this way. We were able to have Zoom Bible studies, meetings, morning prayer. We still do Zoom morning prayer. I mean, we couldn't do that. We have people who have been not showing their faces in church, but are willing to go and have interaction with people on Zoom for morning prayer, which has been great for them. And I'm sorry, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And I don't want to quit Zoom morning prayer because we have about 10, 11, 12, 13, sometimes up to 20 people showing up in morning prayer every day, Monday through Friday, who, if we just had morning prayer analog, we would maybe get one or two.
Well, I know when we did analog morning prayer for a lot of years, we got between 3 and 10, depending on the day. And that was huge. Like, that was great.
Right.
I did love analog morning prayer, though.
Yeah, it's not as worth it. Like,
the people who say that you should have an embodied life with people,
I'm not denying that.
I feel like they have something.
I'm not denying that at all.
I feel like they're saying something.
I'm just
real.
Saying. I mean, and so now, like, I think we one of the reasons I want to do this podcast, I do want to encourage people to go back to church, like to actual analog church on Sunday morning.
I love that. I think I'm gonna ever I'm gonna call an analog.
We should name a church that. Like, we should, if we're gonna plant a church.
Analog.
Wants us to plant a church. We should call it the analog Anglican church.
The.
I can aren't the don't even juggle churches have like all these names like the
analog,
like this the. Potential church or whatever.
Well, yeah, potential church.
We could be analog church.
Yeah. Well, Good Shepherd.
Huh?
But on the sign and on the website, we should put a little like bracket and say this is an analog church.
Well, so what's disturbing? Okay,
you can
so
find it in person on Sunday mornings.
What is disturbing is someone who's not sick and in town and doesn't worry about and is maybe not worried about COVID. Legitimately worried about
COVID. A lot of people are worried about COVID.
Right. But
totally
this is, I know. So I'm talking about.
So you're talking about ye old days before COVID?
I'm talking about people who. No. I'm talking about someone who now, who is not sick, is not out of town, doesn't have a concern personally about COVID, is not really very scared about it. Or worried about it, saying to themselves, and I've heard someone say this, not from our congregation, but I've seen people say this
on Twitter,
on Facebook. I really like staying home. I think this is why should I go to church? Because I get the sermon, I get to see the people that I love in the worship service, and I talk to them. It's on social media anyway. Do I really need to be there? And I think that comes from a specifically very new way of looking at what church is. So that, and in particular, new in our, particularly an American way or Western way of looking at what the church is. Because when the shift happened in the, 50s, 60s, maybe earlier, from we go to church to worship God to we go to church to have, you know, have our felt needs met, the seeker sensitive movement.
Mm-hmm.
We just trained, I think, two generations of Christians now to assess church by is this meeting what I want and giving me what I would like. And not to think about God giving you through word and sacrament what you must have. And God's Christ's presence there with the gathered body as essential to the growth and nourishment of the Christian faith. you sever that cord, and now the pandemic comes along, and so of course you got like thousands of people sitting at home saying, "Well, I don't need to go to church. Why do I go to church?
Mm-hmm.
I can watch it." And I'm comfortable. And I'm getting what I need. I'm getting the sermon.
The problem is that because Christians sort of had already sort of slipped there, it was easy then for governmental authorities to also say that.
Yeah.
To say, for non-Christians, to say to Christians, and I would say other kinds of religious people, you don't have to meet together. Like, right. That's not an essential part of your faith.
Right.
And I feel like Christians didn't have a lot of response, really, to say, no, actually, it is essential. But I do think a lot of the frustration and rage that Christians and other kinds of mm-hmm. people of faith have felt is because, you know, people, when the other kinds of people have said, you don't have to meet, you shouldn't meet, it's wicked to meet. And they didn't really maybe have a good theological case to explain why they felt like they really did need to meet.
Right.
You know, they weren't able to say it, no, we do, other than like, well, don't keep your laws off me.
Right.
Which isn't a good theological case. Like, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
It's not a good Christian.
No. I mean, the instinct, though, to say we have to meet was right on. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The instinct to say we
have to safely meet.
We have, yeah. I mean, it's interesting the question is that there's a text like Hebrews 10:25. Is that now culturally bound? Like where God says through the author of Hebrews, don't neglect
so the gathering of the
faithful. And the purpose he's specifically points to is mutual encouragement. But it's a command. And so would we now in the digital age say, well, we're meeting that fulfillment by Zoom, or we're able to obey
like,
that?
Does it have to be an analog meeting? Does it have, or can it be cyber and digital? Is that good enough?
Yeah. And the answer to that question, I think, comes with what God also, or Christ also, instituted along with the gathering of the body, and that's the breaking of the bread, the fellowship, and the prayers. These are things that the breaking of the bread in particular, the taking communion is one of the chief ways that you are bound to Christ and he's bound to you, and you're bound to one another. I mean, the communion also is one way that the fellowship is actually made, the union between Christians as a body is solidified and made closer every Sunday. Having fellowship, I think, in modern parlance has come to mean like, hey, me and my Christian buddies are watching football today, or me and my Christian buddies are going to go and have a party.
We had a great time
in
fellowship.
We had a great time in fellowship. But koinonia is the climax of koinonia, and the way that koinonia is actually established is at the Eucharist, is at communion. That's what God uses it for. You know, you have this cup, you're participating in the body of Christ. When you have this bread, in the blood of Christ, when you have the bread, you're participating in the body of Christ. You're made one through that.
So
that's from 1 Corinthians 10.
Who was it that was saying? I was listening to your podcast through the wall. I mean, you were listening to a podcast really loud, and I could hear it through the wall, so I wasn't really listening. But he said, whoever this was, it's not like you can't take communion alone. If you passed out communion to your congregation, everybody's taking it while they watch the screen, that's actually not communion. It doesn't count.
Right. No, that's different than pre-consecrated hosts. He was talking about having like an institutional, the institution over the screen.
Oh, right? Okay.
Right? So you can't do that in a gathered body. You can take communion that's already been blessed and give it to somebody in the hospital or take it to have somebody who's homebound take it, and that's kind of a situation that we were in during COVID.
But that's not like a long, well, if somebody's in the hospital or no nursing home, that's it. But would you wouldn't say to somebody who isn't in a dire situation,
right? It wouldn't be a regular.
Does it go on? Could it stop being communion if it, like, once it started?
Yeah,
being
so
communion?
So you wouldn't want to say like when there's no reason not to go to church. You wouldn't want to say, okay, well, we're going to have our primary service online only. You're going to have to come. I'm going to consecrate the Eucharist, and I'm going to just pass it out to you regularly for the rest of eternity, and we don't have to come together. That would be...
At that point, would it cease to be...
I think in times of extraordinary stress and, you know, difficulty, like during the pandemic, whether, again, setting aside whether or not you think it's real or not, I don't want to get into that. I think God is gracious to his people and feeds them and helps them. But if the people just decide, you know what, we're not going to meet, we're not going to be the church, because the church is the ecclesia, the gathering. If you just decide we're not going to do it, well, I think there's a point at which you've ceased to be the church. You cease to be the ecclesia, the gathering.
Because you're not gathering.
Right, right. And it's really important. I don't think... one of the things about taking communion, about having the scriptures read publicly, about reading, hearing a sermon in person, and gathering with the people with whom you're in communion and bound on a spiritual level, is that it's the change is so gradual you don't notice it. Like the way that God feeds you in that, and the way that he helps you, and the way that he makes your life bound up with his through that is so gradual,
yeah,
that the people just don't notice it until they're away for a while,
and then they
I used to say it's a lot. Yeah, you could tell.
Feel it.
Right. Someone starts, someone who's been faithful, starts coming. Okay, we're going to move to, twice a month. We're going to move to, okay, maybe I'll come once a month. Maybe I'm not going to come at all. But hey, I can watch it. Expect, if that's you, if you're really a believer, you're going to, if you've made those choices and you feel like your life is coming apart, you're crazy or things are insane. Well, there's a reason for that because you've unplugged yourself. You've taken yourself away from the source of God's, which is the church, the source of God's grace to you on a regular basis. The primary means by which he sets himself within, he feeds you and makes you more and more his over time.
It is there's this sort of interesting, I don't know what you would call it, paradox between the question of what it feels like and the reality of it. Because it's true, I think, so there's several things. First, I think it's really hard to go to church in normal circumstances. It's physically hard to go to church.
Yeah.
It's hard to walk through the door, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to sit in a pew or a chair or whatever. It's hard to be around other people you don't know very well, yeah, or people you don't like. If you have gotten to know them, then there are definitely people that are difficult for you to be around. There's always, I love going to church. I've always loved going to church, but I always have a sort of sense of dread when I walk into any church,
yeah,
even my own. Like, what's going to happen today? And whether I'm a visitor or not, it is hard. You have to overcome a little something to just walk through the door of a church. Whether you're a newcomer or somebody who has never missed a Sunday for their 90 years. Okay, so that's because you're beating down Satan under your heel.
To get there.
There, Satan doesn't want you to go to church.
And he's going to use every stratagem he can to get you.
Yeah, so when you walk in, you have in a very small sense, usually that you can't feel, you've been in a little battle, and if you got in and sat down, then you won that battle. But like many battles, you may not feel the triumph of it. You may feel defeated, actually. Right. You may feel exhausted because a lot of fighting, even if you win the fight, you don't come out feeling great about it. So your feelings, your feelings in the moment are not the measure, but it's not that there are no feelings.
Right.
Because they're so slowly adjusted over time. They're so it's like growing, basically, a plant.
Right.
The difference between the plant when you put the seed in the ground and the plant when you finally start cutting flowers off of it is huge. But you are not the measure. You don't get to see that. You can't measure that by your feelings every time. So it's not that it's feelingless, like that you should say, well, there are no feelings involved. It doesn't matter how I feel. Well, it does matter, but that's not the measure of your actual lived experience, is how you're feeling on a given morning.
Because it's because the means by which God, Christ, he said, this is my body given for you. This is the cup of the New Testament, my blood. The promises that he associates with the table don't depend on what you're feeling. It's not what you're saying. We were saying last week about Pentecost, that Luke is very careful to describe what happened externally. That there was a sound of a rushing wind. There was a sight of flames of fire on top of their heads, but there's no description of what they were feeling. It's just the promise, but those outward signs pointed to the fulfillment of the promise of the Father that he would send the Spirit. And so they could believe it based on what the word that was spoken to them. And the same thing with us. We can believe that God is working in us because he's promised to do so through his word both read and preached, and through the sacraments that he's given to us. So it doesn't matter. So, like, yeah, I mean, you're right. There doesn't, it's not that things are not there. Of course they are. I mean, yesterday, I mean, I particularly loved the music and the St. Patrick's breastplate. And I don't know if you like it or not, but I love Holy, Holy, Holy.
Yeah, I love that one.
It was really nice. And there was a lot of people there. So you could hear people singing for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear the choir for the first time in a long time. Because people are just increasingly not wearing masks because of, I don't want to get into that. But,
getting vaccinated.
Yeah. And so it's just beautiful hearing something thunderous in the first. Yeah, I guess maybe it just sounded thunderous because I haven't heard it for a long time.
Yeah, we haven't heard it for a
long time. It was really brilliant. People were singing.
Yeah.
And it was moving. It was a moving experience for me.
Especially after so many months of lack and not having it. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, maybe next time they won't be so moving. Or, I mean, I don't know. But it's still, the promises are there.
It's going to be ordinary time next week. And so, and the summer is kicking into high gear. So that's going to be fun for you. It's your favorite.
Yeah.
I think I very much agree with the writer of Digital Minimalism that, digital and cyber cannot replace analog. I guess it can fill in the gaps for a while, but you have to have real relationships with people wherein you see them occasionally. He recommends talking on the phone, which I think is very bad. That's the most wickedest part of this book, is that he recommends people having long phone conversations, which I think is... Well, it's terrible. I can't even imagine trying to do that. But I don't think you can. I don't think you can really replace real interactions with people where you see them with anything cyber or digital.
Yeah, no, you can't, and I agree with that. I mean, this goes back to the beginning. I do appreciate that for people who are, if I were in a nursing home and I couldn't get out to do anything, if I were shut in, I'd be so thankful for Zoom morning prayer. I'd be so thankful for the service on Facebook.
Yeah.
So that's why we're probably going to have to go toe-to-toe about ever taking those down. Because, you know, I bet, you know, the ladies that we had in the nursing home before COVID who were, you know, died during COVID.
Yeah.
But if they had been technologically savvy before that and were able to, or not even, doesn't take that much savviness, but just if they were able to get on Zoom morning prayer or to watch the service, I think that would have been really helpful for them. And maybe they would have lived.
Yeah.
Seeing that.
Because they definitely... They definitely died because of the isolation.
I mean,
I'm
not a doctor, but
no, but like sure. They all who had been trucking along and then they all took a sudden decline.
Yeah.
And there were no medical, like they didn't die of anything in particular. It's just, they suddenly all, the isolation was just terrible. And I think that's the interesting thing about this book is that he's described how these technologies promise to do what in life analog interactions used to do for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They promise that. And so, and because they keep it, it's like a slow, tiny drip. They do satisfy something a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they're nothing. They keep you kind of always... there, like a little bit dissatisfied, but not enough that you would change or go away or actually go see somebody in real life or,
right.
Which I think is, it's good. It's good, but you're a bad person for thinking that it's not a good book or thinking that you shouldn't change your online behavior based on the book that I'm reading about Minimalism. Just kidding.
I hate all minimalism. I think it's bad. But but I think there is something to that. I mean, there's something that communication is a whole body experience. It's not just me speaking words into a microphone and someone else hearing them, or vice versa. That's why I'm not sure the phone thing.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah, I can't say
anything. It's a very great wickedness to even suggest it.
There's the sight, smell, touch, all the senses are usually involved in personal interaction in some way, shape, or form. And Zoom, as much as it can be very helpful in certain cases, it does reduce it to sight and hear, mm-hmm. sighting, seeing and hearing. That's not sufficient for the long haul. So I think we're going to continue doing morning prayer of Zoom for a long, long time, but forever. I don't see any reason to ever stop it. But
as a supplement,
like, this is the only outlet I have for social interaction.
Yeah. Well, I guess we've agreed on something.
Well,
I get, you know, just to make it like really the sappy, theological and sappy, like God communicated through the scriptures for many thousands of years. But that wasn't like he actually had to come as a person and be in the body. He couldn't just do Zoom with the people of God on the mountain.
I wouldn't necessarily say the Holy Spirit was Zoom.
Like, no, I mean like the
dwell
like,
with them in the tabernacle, and he moved in their hearts to make them believers.
Yeah, but it was like always, it's like, no, the Holy Spirit's not Zoom, but Moses going up and down the mountain is right. Like, you know, trying to relay information back and forth. And
now the word is near you, it's in your heart.
Yeah.
Right.
God came in the flesh.
Right.
Which means that you have to like be with other people in an embodied way. I hate the word embodied. I really prefer analog now. Like, I think we should.
Enfleshed sounds a little bit too close. Like, I'm going to be enfleshed with my church.
Yeah. But analog, I'm going to be analog with my church, is so great. I love that.
Yeah, I do like that.
And then it's quick because you could say, is this meeting cyber or analog? And you can say analog, meaning you have to go. So that's another thing. Like, when will the vestry ever start meeting together in person?
Yeah, we're going to do that in the beginning of the fall. So
it's really going to be stressful to actually have to leave.
Church. It's another problem. So if you're meeting together at church regularly on a Sunday morning, I do think there's some things that are more convenient about Zoom as supplementing the meetings, right? Because
they're shorter.
They're shorter. And I'm not just talking about vestry. Nobody does anything. Like, I've found meetings to be far more productive on Zoom than in person. Now, it may also be that you lose something, some personal interaction.
Yeah.
But, or people are less likely to speak, or people are more likely to speak, who knows? But wow, I mean, not just church, but every meeting that I've been to on Zoom has been significantly shorter and far more productive than it ever was in person. And I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what that is. And less burdensome. Like, if I know I have a Zoom meeting at 6, I can just go upstairs and get on the computer. If I think I have to go somewhere at 6, I'll have to bathe. Put on something below the half.
Oh my gosh.
It's a whole thing. You gotta get in the car, you gotta make sure you time it right. If I'm leading the meeting or chairing the meeting, I gotta be there, just, you know, be sure I'm on time. Yeah, it's a real pain.
I feel sad by what you just said. So I do think it wouldn't be bad to do like half of the year on Zoom for the vestry and half in real life or analog, because then you'd have productivity And I do. I think that I wonder that some people who don't talk in real face to face do talk on Zoom, and vice versa. Some people who don't talk on Zoom would talk if you were in the room together. Like, so you might get more engagement. You might get more people talking. If you did both kinds of things.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So I know, yes, right, I've committed to getting back to Vestry in person in the fall, but I'm wondering if after one meeting we might decide, you know what, this was a 2.5 hour meeting.
That could have been 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But you know why? It's because people like to be together. They like to talk, and you're an exception in that regard. You don't like to be.
No, that's one of the interesting things about COVID is I've actually enjoyed being in church. I mean, I enjoyed being in church before that. I don't get that wrong, but I found myself missing in-person personal interaction, which I didn't think I would when COVID first started.
Yeah, for a while, COVID was mine a little bit, but your best life now. Like, you were so happy. It was kind of bad.
Yeah, it was very bad. It was evil. But
other people were suffering, and not
going to church part, but the you know, one of the things about being an introvert is every personal interaction comes at a cost, not just your cost of your energy. It drains you. Like if you're a really severe introvert, it drains you. Not it's not you don't like the person, you love the person, but it's just social interaction face to face. Something's always at stake. You always feel like I could lose something here really badly. I could say something wrong. I could offend somebody. I could look the wrong way. I could mess up really badly. So there's always like this test. I always feel a test or some kind of, when I'm not with you, because, you know, I'm married to you.
Great to learn now, 20 years on.
But with people who you're not in the same family with, there's always something at stake. There's always a little risk. And whereas if you don't talk to that person, there's no risk. There's, you know, if I'm down in the parish hall and a parishioner just comes up and says something to me, catches me off guard, and I say something
stupid,
you know, there it goes. I've just offended that person, right? So it's much easier not even to take that risk.
I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about the new world in general, is that we have taken away, I mean, going to worship God in person is risky, even if you don't talk to anyone else, because God will probably, you know, have something to say about you. Right. If you're really worshiping God, if you're really there and you're listening to the scriptures and you're praying, it's likely that you would get out unscathed. What are you doing with that? No, but that's been used by hundreds of people. So no, go look for other ones. Now I'm talking to a child and not to my listener. Mm-hmm. So
not a child.
That's true. She's not a child. She's a grown person. So, and that really is a signal to me that the other person who's not a child either and should know better has to be driven toward these final moments of exams. So
we should go.
I know this was an important,
very short, but we thought we should let you hear our voices.
Yeah, this is important. This, because our voices matter,
right?
Just like everybody should have their say in this important time.
We're centering ourselves. See, centering now is a good thing,
right? Yeah, no, it's not. It depends on who you are. Huh? If you're the wrong person, you should not center yourself. You should decenter yourself.
But the self is also a good thing now, isn't it? Like, also,
if you
center yourself.
But you're the wrong kind of person to do that, so no.
We're self-centered.
No. I love the word self in front of things. Like, I listened to this great podcast, and they kept saying self-truth. Which is actually good. Like, no, because they were using it like, you should tell yourself the truth.
Okay.
Not like, yourself is the truth. It was a Christian saying, oh, and self-lie. You shouldn't self-lie. You should self-truth. Meaning, don't lie to yourself. Okay. Tell yourself the truth. But I love whoever this is, like, subverted the putting of the self and made it into, like, its original thing again, which is great. I'm going to do that all the time. Self-analog means I'm going to go to church in person. Ecclesiastical self-analog.
Yeah.
It's where you yourself go to church in person.
Ecclesiastical analog.
Self-analog.
Self-analog.
Like self... You... And yeah, it's too hard.
I am, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for listening, and it's possible we'll be back next week, but who knows.